Welcome to Influential Visions Podcast. Here, we interview futuristic leaders who share their deep industry knowledge and business experience with you, ensuring you have your finger on the pulse and your eyes wide open. In this series about imposter syndrome, our regular host, Nathaniel Schooler, is joined by Kim Adele Platz as they interview leaders from around the world, sharing how they overcame their inner imposter.
Well, thanks for joining us. We are really privileged today to be joined by Lisa Ventura, and she's an award-winning cybersecurity consultant, and she's the CEO and founder of the UK Cybersecurity Association as well, and she does various other things, which I'm sure we'll get into as we get into this episode on imposter syndrome. So, yeah, over to you guys.
Thank you, Nat. Great to be here.
Oh, it's so lovely to have you along, Lisa. I'm really looking forward to hearing more about your journey and sharing with us perhaps some of the highs and lows and some of the obstacles and the opportunities that you've had along the way.
Sure.
Yeah, it's a big, big topic, this. Yeah. And that's why we're doing this sort of series. And, you know, I know you get affected by this on a sort of day to day, Lisa. Yeah. And, you know, Kim's been doing a lot of coaching around it, coaching a lot of executives through this kind of problem. And, you know, it impacts you, right, on a daily basis.
Absolutely. And,
you know, so how does it do that, Lisa?
So I've been in cybersecurity now for over 10 years. And prior to that, I was in the entertainment industry working with the likes of Chris Tarrant, who was the host of Who Wants to Be a Millionaire here in the UK. So I've always had a degree of imposter syndrome, those voices in my head that tell me that I'm not good enough, that I'm a fraud, that I shouldn't be here. And no matter what I do, no matter what approaches I get via email in my work with cybersecurity, no matter what award nominations and awards I've won, that internal dialogue is always there, and it's chattering away to me constantly, and it's saying things like, they must have got it wrong, or that opportunity, that award nomination or award was meant for someone else, not me. I feel like a complete fraud, and one day I'll be found out. So-and-so is better than me. Why weren't they asked instead of me? I feel like I'm completely clueless in cybersecurity, and one day they'll see that I am, and I shouldn't be in the cybersecurity and infosec industry. There are far more worthy people in it than me. And that's just a tiny fraction of the things that I say to myself all the time. And it can be quite debilitating. So just for an example, even just this week on Monday, I found out that I'd been picked by CISO magazine as their 2020 InfoSec Superwoman of the Year. And when that landed in my email box, my very first thought was, that's not meant for me. That's somebody else. They've got that completely wrong. And that's just one example.
I saw that. That's why I make sure every time I see, you seem to win an award every week.
Yeah. Or at least I seem to be shortlisted. Yes.
I just congratulate you every time in the hope that, you know, I can kind of nudge you away from that, you know. Because I think it takes that recognition. Like, what do you think, Kim?
Yeah. Yes, honestly, it so resonates, Lisa, what you're saying. Yeah. You know, I've lived 47 years doing the same thing. And for me, one of the breakthrough moments was when I realized that actually inadvertently I was making my opinion more important. And as somebody with imposter syndrome, that just doesn't resonate, does it? To go, my opinion's more important than anybody else's. But I suddenly looked at it and went, these people that I respect and admire are choosing to give me an opportunity, or they're choosing to recognize me for something. So rather than assume my opinion that I'm rubbish is better than their opinion that I'm good, I'm going to borrow their opinion. I'm going to borrow their belief in me and just try that on for size. And it really helps because you can start to have that debate that goes, well, I don't think I'm cleverer than them. I don't think my opinion is more important. So why am I choosing to live with my opinion that I'm pretty much, I suck at what I do, which is kind of where, you know, where I lived. And I so get that, you know, when something comes through and you go, they don't mean me, or if only they knew, if only they knew what I knew, that I'm actually hopeless, then they wouldn't have done this. And it's such an awful way to live. And I think it's, I mean, 70% of people get imposter syndrome at some time. So I think it's helpful to know that you're not alone. And even Einstein had it. So he has a quote which says, the esteem within which my works are held leave me feeling like an unlikely swindler. He was a genius. We all know he was a genius, and yet he felt it too. So there is that element of saying, actually, once you know that actually it's quite normal to feel like this, it's then a case of how can you re-trigger your thinking and you know, look at the alternate view, which is if all of these people are telling you that you're good at this, if they can't all be wrong. they can't all be wrong and you be right. Because again, as somebody who suffers from imposter syndrome, that doesn't resonate either, does it? That everybody else is wrong and you're right. So I think sometimes it's pulling yourself back to those, I'm saying this, but actually what's that actually meaning? I'm suggesting for other people can be, I guess it's a way of trying to reframe your thinking, because that's what we kind of need to do, isn't it? You can't ignore that thinking. You can't assume that it, you know, that you can just forget about it and it'll go away. That little voice is horrible, isn't it?
It absolutely is horrible. And I've actually been having some coaching sessions over the last 4 months. And in my fourth coaching session last month, my coach actually helped me with a breakthrough moment with regard to my imposter syndrome and how bad it is, because she helped me to see how much it was holding me back. And I didn't have an insight into why it was holding me back so much, but she helped me to unlock the reason why. And oh my goodness, it was just such a light bulb moment. So she explained it that there's always a payoff with imposter syndrome, and that it isn't necessarily a bad thing at times. And that in my case, imposter syndrome was actually protecting me. And it was and is a safety blanket to protect me from getting hurt again. And that's because I've been subjected to so much bullying, abuse and harassment thrown at me, as well as some very cruel betrayals from people that I trusted in the past. And as a result, over the years, I became extremely guarded and I don't trust easily. And so with all my work with the Cybersecurity Association and everything else that I do, I've kind of just tried to do everything myself, even though I've had lots of other people saying, I'll help you, I'll help you, I'll do this for you. I did the thing. No, no, no. And I've just sort of held it, you know, quite back. And if I can't do it and my husband can't do it, because I work very closely with him, then it just didn't happen. And this year I've made some, for me, quite groundbreaking steps to work with other people. So I work very closely with Chris Windley, and we're doing the Cybersecurity Valley Project, and yourself, Nathan, and Tyler, and people like that. And I've never spoken about actually how hard that is for me to do that, because of everything that's happened to me in the past, and some of the betrayals that I've had from people I've worked with and brought in and trusted. So it for me, I realized, gosh, yes, it's there, and it's so acute because it's protecting me from that hurt.
And it's so it can so obviously do that for people, because imposter syndrome takes us back to something that happened in our default when we were children. So we have a default character that gets built as we're children, usually in three stages, like up to the age of 7, up to the age of 14, and then again up to the age of 21, which pulls us back to an I am statement. And for me, mine was, I am not enough. And therefore, over the years, when people have betrayed you or let you down or anything, it pulls it back to the I am not enough. And I spent years thinking that my imposter syndrome was helping me, because it was letting me know I'm not enough. So don't put yourself out there, because actually you're only going to get hurt. You're going to be able to pull back. But I then realized that actually it means that my inner child is in control. And right now my inner child needs the inner adult to take over and like help them through. And it's kind of finding a way to do that where you feel safer, isn't it? Because it's hard to put yourself out there again when you've been hurt, when and when you've still got that doubt, because I think we kind of end up with the what's the fact and what have we made it mean? And it's through what we've made it mean that kind of cripples us. Because if you kind of take it back to what's factually happened, it's often not that bad.
Yeah.
Because we've made it mean something horrendous, because we've layered it on everything else that's ever gone wrong. It's like, well, you know, well, this is a trend. This happens all the time to me. So I shouldn't put myself out there. Does that resonate with how you've felt over the years?
Absolutely. And particularly this last year or so, where I've tried to build up more of a presence on social media and using those channels and things more. My Twitter following is heading up to 10K now. I'm nearly at 10,000 odd connections on LinkedIn. And I just keep thinking, why do they want to follow me? Why do they want to add me? I'm nothing. I'm nobody. And yeah, I've got all these people that are looking at what I'm tweeting and what I'm posting and so on. So that's quite difficult as well sometimes to, you know, to come to terms with and get my head around and so on.
Yeah, it's so difficult, isn't it? Because until,
you carry on. You started first.
So I was just going to say, one of those things where actually it doesn't matter how much validation you're getting from everybody else, until you can recognise it for yourself, it's very hard for that to land, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. And a couple of years ago, I actually had an incident with another woman in cybersecurity who I really admired, I really looked up to, thought she did absolutely great work. And yet I was abused by her quite badly. And that really was quite, oh my goodness, this woman that I thought was just, you know, so inspiring and everything, and that just wasn't the case. So the bullying and that kind of thing is really hard to, and it almost validates that imposter syndrome of, well, you know, they think this. I mean, she basically told me that what I was doing wouldn't amount to anything, that the Cybersecurity Association was a waste of time, and why was I bothering doing it? And yet I see so many posts from her, you know, on social media about how she's helping other people or helping other women. And I just think, you're anything but. And it, yeah. And I just think, no, why would you be like that with someone? Why would you put somebody, you know, down instead of trying to bring them up? But I can only think she must have been threatened or jealous in some way.
Yeah. Sad, really.
Yeah.
You know, it's a real shame. But so, How do you overcome it then and deal with it on a daily basis, Lisa?
It's only been since I've been having my coaching sessions that I've started to try and actively get some coping mechanisms in place about it. And I started to think, well, what if I didn't listen to those voices in my head? And what if for every negative thought that I had that contributes to my imposter syndrome, I try to turn it around into something positive? So, for example, instead of thinking that I'm a fraud and I'm going to be, you know, found out any moment, I try to think, well, actually, I could be inspiring someone through what I do and the knowledge that I share. You know, somebody could be reading that or looking at my journey or looking at the things that I've done and what I've been through. And they might actually think, you know, gosh, I could do that too. And I've also started an imposter syndrome notebook. So every time I find myself thinking a negative thought, I write it down, but I also write a positive response next to it. And then I look at all the things that I've written with those positive responses, and I'm hoping after a while that everything positive will combat everything negative, because I don't think those voices in my head are going to go away. I think they're always going to try and be there. But what I am trying to do is to learn how to drown those voices out so they don't hold me back as much as they do.
Oh, I love it. I've got a really good friend who taught me years ago to have a big me up book.
Yeah.
So you had to put down every time somebody says thank you, every time somebody acknowledges you for something, every time, even those moments, because you do get them where you go, actually, I did all right there. They might be rare, but you'll get the odd moment where you're like, that didn't go so bad. Wasn't as horrendous. And just write them down so that every time you get that moment of doubt, you just flick through your big me up book and see, actually, this is a moment of doubt. This is not a lifetime of doubt.
Yeah.
Because it doesn't feel like it in the moment, but maybe something like that could help as well as your imposter piece, because you're focusing on the bits you want to remember rather than the bits you don't.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's really good. Yeah, it's such a crazy kind of thing. Like when you start exploring the mind and, like, you know, the effect that your self-talk has on you.
Yeah.
It's quite bizarre, really, when you think about it, that there's this sort of all these thoughts that are going around in your head. And because, you know, we don't really focus a lot on like clearing the mind, that they just continually go around and around. And it's quite destructive if you think about it, really.
I think it is very destructive, and it's something that I have to learn every day to, you know, overcome, or, you know, try to sort of drown those voices out and say, it's a slow process, and I don't think it's something that's ever going to go away. It's like you said, Kim, you almost learn to sort of live with it and manage it. It never disappears.
Yeah. I think what you do eventually, and having spent a lot of years doing a lot of study in this, eventually you recognize it very quickly, and then you can go for the positives, because we live in a world of polarity. So for every plus there's a minus, for every up there's a down. So every time you think of something really, really negative, if you think of what's the polar opposite of this, because the chances are everybody else is seeing that, not what I'm seeing. And you can kind of start to change your vantage point. But you're right, it's hard. And I think it is that acknowledgement that it will keep creeping in, and you will, just at the moment that you don't want it to, you know, it'll like go, hello, I'm just gonna chat to you now. And you're like, really? Right now? Could you just pipe down? But I think getting the right coping mechanisms allows you to recognize it and not allow it to debilitate, because it can, can't it? It can really cripple.
Yeah. I mean, I literally went through a point where I thought, what is the point? Why should I bother with the UK CSA or anything after that, you know, sort of, you know, one incident? And it was really, really acute at that point, really acute.
And unfortunately, that is one of the other downsides of it, is sometimes people will see it and they will use it to their advantage, particularly if they've got a little bit of it themselves, because pity loves a party. So if I'm feeling a little bit down and I can make you feel a little bit down, then actually we're going to be miserable together.
Yeah.
I'm not going to be on my own. And it's an awful human trait. And I think, you know, if we could help people get past that says actually work on yourself, because I think people don't hurt you on purpose. The fact is they're dealing with their own hurt, and you become collateral damage because they're not really considering you. But they don't understand the impact that it has, because that probably really pulled you back for a long period. And I'm sure if that lady ever knew that she'd done that, she'd probably be really hurt that she'd hurt you, because she probably wasn't thinking about it at all. She was just thinking about herself and her own pain and where she was sitting.
Yeah.
Do you really think that she is unaware that she caused hurt? Maybe she's just a person that likes to hurt people. Yeah. I mean,
it just doesn't add up from the public persona of, you know, she wants to help people and she's always there to, you know, answer questions and so on. It was a complete disconnect from the way she was with me to how she comes across. Yeah.
Very weird. It often you get people and you don't really know what frame of mind they're in. Like, so anything could happen. Like, you know, something might have happened to her that day and you just said one thing and that triggered her to do that. I mean, it's a funny, fickle world we live in with this social media and stuff. It's pretty crazy, really. So do you do anything else then, Lisa? Do you like go for a dog walk or like what, you know, is that sort of part of your mechanism to deal with this?
Yeah, so I try my best to do, you know, all sorts of things. My dog's been ill actually for the last couple of months, so I've not been able to go out and walk with her while she's been recovering. So I've turned that into gym time in my home gym. And if I'm starting to feel a little bit like this is too much, I just need to take some time to process things in my head, I'll just go for a walk on the treadmill. Because I can't go out for a walk even on my own, just getting my shoes on. She's like, oh, are we going out? It's like, no, we can't go out. So I have to think of ingenious ways to still get that walking and that bit of sort of thought time without getting her too excited that she's going out for a walk. And that really, really helps as well. So even yesterday it was happening. It's like, no, stop. And I'll just get up and I went to have a little walk on the treadmill. So that's something I've recently, literally just in the last week or so, started doing, is just getting up and going on the treadmill, having that bit of thinking time and trying to just, you know, dispel a lot of those thoughts and come back, you know, refreshed and ready to go again.
I love it. That's a great way of like almost almost distracting yourself, isn't it? Saying, I'm not willing to go down this rabbit warren. I'm going to take myself away. I'm going to allow myself to have some rest time, because I think sometimes when we're in the throes of it, you think, well, I've just got to work harder. I've just got to do more. I've just got to keep going, even though I think what I'm doing is hopeless. It's like, I'll just do more hopeless stuff and hope that some of that will work out. Has that been like it for you?
Yeah, absolutely. And one other thing that really helps as well is that no matter what my husband and I do during the day, and that includes the daytimes on the weekends, we don't do anything in the evenings. We stop in the evenings. That's our time. That's our downtime, relaxing, watching TV, films, whatever we want to do. And we always do that, and that's sacrosanct. The odd thing obviously comes up or something happens or whatever, but for the most part, and especially through this pandemic, that's what we've stuck to doing, and that's really helped us as well.
It's really good you mentioned that, because like, you get all these entrepreneurs, like they wear this badge of honor. I worked 100 hours this week, and it's just like, actually they've proven that anything over 55 hours it basically doesn't help with your productivity. So you know, I'm really pleased that you sort of brought that work-life balance into it.
It's so important, and it's helped us get through the pandemic, I think, as well.
It's so crucial, isn't it, to have those barriers, so that you because if not, everything blends, doesn't it? And I think one of the challenges for people, particularly in the pandemic, is they've kind of not worked out where the barrier is. If I stop work now and I go and do me time, and the laptop's on the edge of the dining room table, so you kind of can't get away from it. Kind of, like it's kind of always there. I think it's so important that we do take that time to recharge. Imposter syndrome affects 70% of us at some point. If this is affecting you, click the link to get help.
Plus, I have my separate space, as you can see, for my office. So that's where I work. And everything else is shut off until I stop, in the evening, we have our dinner. Occasionally, I'll take the laptop and go downstairs just to be with the dog a bit more and spend a little bit of time with her. But for the most part, I'm up here in the separate space, which really helps.
Yeah. Absolutely brilliant. Yeah. So what advice would you give to someone who's suffering from imposter syndrome, Lisa?
Don't suffer alone. Talk about it, definitely. It's really easy for me to say ignore those voices, because you can't. It's really difficult. So, find things that work for you. For me, it's been the notebook of jotting everything down every time I have one of those thoughts and why. So Monday's note, for example, was when I heard about the award, and I wrote down, oh no, it wasn't meant for me. And so, and then I countered that with, actually I must have done some good things to be able to even be considered for that award, let alone win it. So it's always try your best to counteract anything negative, all those thoughts that you're not good enough, with something positive, because you are good enough and you are enough and you do deserve to be doing what you do and deserve to be in the industry that you're in.
Thank you. I feel better already.
That is such amazing advice, because you're right. It is that... it's changing that mindset. So, you are worth it, and kind of borrowing other people's belief. So, people have believed in you, which is why they've put you forward for the award. It's why you've won the award. So sometimes it's borrowing that belief and going, I'm just going to borrow yours until I get my own. I'm going to borrow yours. But that's like so insightful. So if there were one thing that you could encourage anybody who's doubting themselves to do, what would it be?
Again, easy to say, but just really believe in yourself and what you're doing, and try to just drown out any of those voices that say to you, this isn't a good idea, what you're doing, isn't going to work, and so on. Ignore it. If you've had that idea, if you, want to go for it, and you feel it's something you really want to do and it's your passion, go for it, do it, and really just try to ignore those voices in your head or anybody that says, otherwise. That's what's really helped me.
Absolutely brilliant. Absolutely brilliant. So, Kim, what's your key takeaway then from this?
So I've loved every minute. At least I could chat to you all day. I think it is. So I love the fact that you're doing the reframing. So, thinking about what is the thing that you're telling yourself that is negative, and then looking at, is there an alternative to that? Mm. So acknowledging first, yeah, okay, this is what I'm thinking, but then asking yourself, what else could there be? Are there any facts that disprove this statement? Because that really is helping you shift your thinking, isn't it? And allowing yeah. yourself to put it, almost push it down and do it anyway. And I guess that's the kind of, that's the takeaway I'm getting from your story, is you acknowledge that often you are holding yourself back, but actually you go, I know I'm doing that. So I'm actually going to think about what's the alternative to this, and I'm not going to let it stop me. Because I think the thing for me, it reminds me a lot when I think about children when they're growing up. It's like, you know, when children are growing up, they want to learn how to walk and talk, and it doesn't matter how many times they fall down, how many times they hurt themselves, they just get back up, because one, they don't know how to say no, and two, they've people around them have got utter belief that they can do it.
Yeah.
Haven't they? You kind of go, come on, you're nearly there. It's like, you're nearly there. And I think that's kind of the thing we need as adults, isn't it? Is that person who's going to give us that belief and go, come on, you've got this. You can do this. And if you can do that for yourself, and it sounds like you're really trying with that, yeah. with the book and with the coaching and with yeah. the talking about it, you're giving yourself back the belief in you, which is amazing. And I yeah. think will inspire so many people listening to the podcast. So thank you so much for being so honest and sharing with us the yeah. journey that you're going on. I think it's I think you're doing an amazing job, and I hope that you will get to the stage where you can see that you've earned every single one of your accolades.
Thank you.
Thanks so much for supporting our show. Please do share this episode with your friends and business associates, and click the link below to subscribe to the podcast. Until next time, take care.